Hey, this is Stacey Gatsoulias,
DC Lundberg,
Ryan Finkelstein,
Taylor Blake Ward,
host of Locked On Yankees,
Locked On Mariners,
Locked On Mets,
Locked On Angels,
and you're listening to Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Braves podcast, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, found wherever your favorite podcasting app or site happens to be, or your favorite radio app. You can find Locked On Braves basically everywhere. You can find the Locked On Podcast basically everywhere, bringing you all of your favorite shows across all of your favorite sports, giving you the information you need to fan the way you want to fan. No more do you have to be stuck around the water cooler waiting for Bob to tell you something that you know for a fact isn't right. Just listen to a Locked On podcast, and you'll be the guy around the water cooler that everybody's asking about. Locked On podcast, bringing you daily episodes and short, digestible little segments to allow you to not bog down your day, to just get to the nitty-gritty, everything you want and need to know to be the best fan possible. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, so a fair bit to talk about. Second half of this show is probably going to be a little bit more serious, but to start off right off the jump, you can obviously tell I'm a little stopped up today. The weather here in Georgia is playing havoc with my sinuses, we'll say. But that doesn't stop the Atlanta Braves, who beat the Minnesota Twins earlier today, Josh Donaldson included, as Max Fried goes 4 2/3 scoreless. Some control problems, though. We've seen from Max today and Soroka the other day, a little bit of uncharacteristic control issues. Now I watched the game, so looked like Max was kind of missing arm side a little bit with his fastball. Wasn't getting some inside strikes that I thought he should have gotten, that he'll probably get in the regular season. But all in all, 4 2/3 scoreless. Only gave up 2 hits. Did have 5 walks to 3 strikeouts, though. That's not typical of Max Fried. Not something I'm worried about. Max has been fine ever since his first start in spring. He's been looking fine. He's been working on a couple of other things as he's looking to really settle into what I imagine will be the number 2 role in this Braves rotation this season, directly behind Mike Soroka. Which I got asked an interesting question this morning on 680 The Fan. If you guys don't know, I am Turtle on 680 The Fan. You can catch us every Wednesday morning. I should be on. But the question posed was, where does Mike Soroka stack up in terms of opening day pitchers, and where does the Braves rotation stack up in general? And it's a very interesting question, not the least bit because we all love Mike Soroka here. We all think Mike Soroka is a stud, me included. And I've been trying to go back and forth and figure this out. Honestly, I think I have Soroka rated right around 8th or 9th, maybe tied with like a Lance Lynn type. And if you look at what Lance Lynn did last year, I'm honestly a little shocked he didn't get any Cy Young love last year. Maybe a product of playing in Texas, but what Lance Lynn did last year was incredible. And it's not a mark against Soroka that I don't have him in the top 5. It's just, you know, you've got guys like DeGrom and Scherzer and Mike Clevenger, if he's going to be healthy. He's probably not going to be starting opening day, but opening day type of starter types. There's just a lot of great pitching in baseball right now. As a matter of fact, there are some guys that are good enough to be in the top 5 of opening day starters that are the number 2 in the rotation. Guys like Noah Syndergaard and guys like Steven Strasburg, who are the number 2s for their respective teams because they happen to be behind DeGrom and Scherzer, et cetera, et cetera. I've got Soroka right with Walker Buehler, which might ruffle some feathers out west, but Mike Soroka is an absolute stud of a pitcher. I think he's going to have a fantastic career. I think Max Fried is going to be in that conversation as well. I think we'll see him take some big steps this year, and I'm very excited. But on the actual rotation strength itself, I still have the Braves 3rd in the division. I've got them behind Washington and New York, mostly because I think those are the 2 best rotations in Major League Baseball. I mean, anytime you're running out a threesome of DeGrom, Thor, and then Marcus Stroman right behind him, or conversely, the Nationals running out Scherzer, Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin, that's tough, if not impossible, to beat. You've got the Astros throwing out Zach Greinke. But I think Soroka, and I think the Braves rotation is certainly better this year, even if in the standings-wise, even in the race, they're still probably in the same spot they were a season ago. I think there's no doubt that they are a better rotation than they were a season ago. And if Mike Foltynewicz can kind of split the difference between his 2018 and his second half of 2019, then the Braves rotation will be very deep indeed, especially once Cole Hamels gets back. But the Braves did make some more cuts today, as now we're starting to get to the ones that kind of hurt a little bit to say. Christian Pache, Tucker Davidson, Phil Pfeiffer, and William Contreras were all sent down, or reassigned, I should say, to AAA. not shocking. They were always going to go down. I thought Pfeiffer might have had an opportunity to win a spot in the bullpen. I'm not sure if they're going to try to leave him as a reliever or if they're going to let him go back to starting. He didn't start a game, and he mostly just did short stints like Tucker Davidson. But I know the plan for Tucker is to allow him to continue developing as a starter. And if he's needed as a call-up, he can pitch out of the pen or in the rotation. Hopefully they do the same thing with Pfeiffer. I was a big fan of what Pfeiffer did, the kind of career resurgence he had when he was allowed to start. But the roster is down to 48. If you notice, I did not mention Drew Waters and Shea Langeliers. Now, they're probably going to be next. Drew Waters absolutely has hit the skids up to a 61% strikeout rate this spring. Tough to see from Drew, and you can tell he's just getting really, really frustrated. You can actually hear him over the air. He's not having a great time of it. But Shea Langeliers, man, you want to talk about somebody whose stock is skyrocketing? What Shea Langeliers has done this spring has been incredible. He's hit the ball better than I expected. He's done a phenomenal job behind the plate. He showed off that rocket arm, had a 187 pop time, which for just for you guys to be aware of, JT Realmuto's generally clocked as the fastest catcher released to second base at 188 on his pop time. And Shea Langeliers posting absolutely elite numbers. The kid is skyrocketing. I won't be shocked to see him start in Mississippi this year and even see time in Gwinnett. I know he and William Contreras are kind of the two big stars back-to-back as far as catching prospects. But I'm starting to come around on Shea Langeliers. I think the Braves are in good hands there. One of the guys struggling still, Marcell Ozuna. I'm not worried. Marcel's been around long enough. He knows what he needs to do to get ready for spring. Striking out a ton, but that's kind of been a theme for a lot of the Braves this year, is they're trying to get timing down. One thing that does leave me a little bit concerned, we're going to talk about coming up next, what the coronavirus is doing to Major League Baseball and professional sports in general, and why this might affect your Atlanta Braves. Coming up in just a second right here on Locked On Braves. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked On Braves. As I mentioned before the break, this is going to be where we start to get a little bit serious, as the coronavirus, for those of you who kind of still don't think it's a big deal, well, Major League Baseball and really professional sports in general, all the way down to college sports, anything that's a big type event, is really taking this seriously, as the number of cases of people infected is starting to skyrocket a little bit. We're starting to see a lot more people get sick. Gary Sanchez of the New York Yankees, there's a fear that he might have contracted it as he's at the doctor. And you're starting to see baseball take a lot of precautions. The Seattle Mariners, as a matter of fact, I believe they've already stated they're going to be playing a lot of home games away. Basically, they're going to play all of their home games away from Seattle until the outbreak is under control, as Washington has been hit hard. The governor of Seattle, either the governor or the mayor, but I think it's, I can't, whichever one is bigger, just put a limit banning crowds of more than 250 people, so you can tell everything being affected right now. And this could bring its way all the way to baseball, and honestly, I think it's going to. I think people need to start wrapping their heads around the fact that there's going to be something that's going to affect this season, whether the season gets started later and the season ends up shortened as a result, or whether they end up finding alternative fields to play on, or whether, as has been discussed and is happening at the NIT tournament and at a lot of other places in around college basketball as March Madness is getting going, playing with no fans in the stadium. Now, while it's not as much fun, obviously, to see the crowd, I understand this one. I think that most likely that's probably going to be what ends up happening, is just playing with no fans in attendance. It's such a big logistical hurdle to try to find alternative stadiums that can actually play to the sizes of a Major League Baseball field or what have you, or house the teams the way they need to be housed and have locker rooms and so on and so forth, that it might just be better off to just not have fans in attendance until this gets under control. This is one of those things that this is a big deal, whether or not you think it's a big deal. It's because baseball thinks it's a big deal, and you can tell by the way people are reacting to this that this is no joke. This is a lot like the swine flu outbreak, where a lot of people were worrying then about what it was going to mean for sports in general. And while I don't think the season is going to be canceled, there's far too much money in that for them to actually cancel a full season. You could see them shorten it up, and you could see them hold the season off until the coronavirus starts to get under control, which would probably shorten you to around 125 games, something like that. It is definitely kind of wreaking havoc right now. A lot of players talking about how they don't want to get sick. They understand, but they don't want to play in front of no crowds either. It is not the situation that we were hoping to see this close to opening day, as we're exactly 2 weeks away, I believe, from opening day. But you got to do what you got to do. And for the Atlanta Braves and for us here in Atlanta, there hasn't been a ton of cases in Atlanta. I don't know what your situation is or your fear level or we'll say caution level. But for the Atlanta Braves, you've already seen it where the media is no longer allowed to be right up next to the players. I think there's an eight-foot table in between them at all times. There's no touching. They're not shaking anybody's hand. If you want an autograph, you basically have to hold your piece up to the netting and let them sign through the netting, which I'm perfectly okay with. I'm not really a big fan of grown men asking other grown men for autographs. But for the kids, I understand it's kind of hard to explain to them why they can't shake hands or meet their favorite player. But you gotta take care of the health of everybody, and you gotta look out for everybody else, especially kids and the elderly, as they're far more likely to have an adverse reaction to this. I'm not gonna get super deep into the whole virus as a whole, because obviously my specialty is baseball, not chemistry and viral sciences or whatever you want to call them. Just know that there is going to be more coming from this. There's going to be more that happens. The baseball season, I won't say the season is in jeopardy, but there's definitely going to be measures taken to ensure the safety of all those possible, or at least to ensure as much as you can, and to make sure that sports stadiums, which, you know, are routinely housing 40,000 people, are a breeding ground for lots for all sorts of bacterial and viral infections. So having to take the proper precautions there is going to put somewhat of a damper on the season. But as we've seen multiple times throughout history, sports are a great unifier. They allow us to kind of put our problems on hold and escape from the day-to-day rigmarole or the day-to-day doldrums of everyday 9-to-5 life and kind of give people an escape. So in that sense, I don't think that they're going to do anything drastic as far as, you know, canceling games or whatnot. I think it's too important to have the games going for them to take that type of step. But it does, I wonder if the season does get shortened, what it will mean for players and what it'll mean as far as the way the season is perceived down the line in future years, where we always know that the strike shortened season of 1994 generally gets an asterisk next to it because you obviously didn't have nearly enough games for guys to qualify. I wonder if we could see that be the same case for 2020. If it does end up being 121 or 125 game season, how are we going to look at the stat lines? It's going to be one of those things that when you look back on it in 10 years and you see, it might say Ronald Acuna has 20 home runs and think, wow, that was a real down year, without realizing that maybe there was 45, 50 games that were kind of cut out of that season. Certainly something to keep an eye on. I'm not one for fear mongering, but it's certainly something to keep abreast of and to take all the proper precautions. I mean, you should have been washing your hands anyway, but as you can tell by the fact that basically everybody is selling out of toilet paper and hand sanitizer, this is not something that has gone away nearly as quickly as a lot of people would have hoped. It's continuing to grow and it's continuing to spread, and I expect we'll see Major League Baseball nearing some type of resolution or some sort of plan here in the next week or two, as college basketball is starting to announce it. I believe the XFL has already done something if you've been paying attention to the XFL. I believe the NFL is hoping that this is all done and gone by that time. Zach Brown was supposed to be doing a spring show. He's already canceled that. He's still going to be at Truist Park, so if you're a Zach Brown fan, you should be able to see Zach Brown, I believe, in May when he's supposed to come around. But all that being said, I still expect it to be a very good season for the Atlanta Braves. I'm not worried about the guys that are struggling right now as far as the established starters. When you're talking about the bullpen guys like Grant Dayton or Shane Green, I'm a little bit more concerned. We'll talk about that on a future episode. We'll probably hit up on that tomorrow. But for now, I don't want to bum you out too much, so I'm going to go ahead and end the show here. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, maybe a little bit earlier, but definitely the same place right here on Locked On Braves.